finding people that just exude the grit that you need to be a property manager, especially at some of these BC class assets that are in transitioning neighborhoods. And you can tell pretty quickly who are the good ones and who are the ones that may not push the envelope enough to get the returns that you need for your investors.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another Multifamily Monday episode. I'm your host, Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. You guys know the drill. Every Monday, we come at you with all things multifamily real estate investing. And as you can tell, still have a head cold I'm trying to get over. So sorry if I sound like I'm coming to you from a fishbowl, but that's what's going on. Hopefully I get over this soon. Before I get into today's episode, just a little housekeeping. I want to give a shout out to someone who recently left a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It comes from Val012311, titled Very Insightful. 5 stars. Sean takes the time to break things down for the layman. I have personally invested with his company and I'm very pleased. Thank you, Sean and team, Valerie. Well, Valerie, I really appreciate that rating review. I know it takes a little time to go in and do that, but it really does help with the rankings of the show. So for the listeners, as I always say, one, if you get any value from this show, please share it with people that you know could get value as well. If you haven't done so, please leave a rating and review. That helps as well. All right. Today's episode, we got a guest. He's a syndicator, operator of multifamily, also has his own recruiting firm. His name is Justin Dixon. He's coming to us from Austin, Texas. Originally grew up in Pennsylvania. When we get into kind of his story, he's had a W-2 career and he realized it just wasn't for him. You know, he said he's a very risk adverse person. And he says most people think those that are risk adverse should do a W-2 job. Like that's the safer thing. But what he's come to realize is it's not the safer thing. So a lot of the time you're just a line item. And if they need to cut expenses, you can easily be dismissed. And so, and also to his point, he says, which I've talked about before, is that you work 40 to 50 years plowing money into a 401k and an IRA and hoping you have enough to retire. That shouldn't be someone for someone who's risk averse, right? And so we get into why he left his W-2, why he started these two companies. And we obviously talk a lot about, you know, the real estate market, how they've acquired the properties they have, how they're managing them, and what he sees coming in 2023. It's a very great conversation. We even talk about his recruiting firm and how it's helped him in his real estate business and how it can help others grow their teams as well. So I really enjoyed this conversation with Justin. So without further ado, let's bring him in. Justin, welcome to the show, my friend.
Yeah, man. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for taking time out of your busy day to get here. I know you're a busy guy running a few businesses. So let's just get right into it. Everyone loves a good origin story. So if you don't mind sharing where you came from and how you got to be a multifamily investor today.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. I grew up kind of in a small rural town in central Pennsylvania. We had a little farm that we had and chickens and pigs and all that fun stuff. And so I kind of had the financial advice that a lot of middle America and kind of working class people have is get a good job, stay there forever, invest in a 401k, hope you have enough money when you retire at 65 or 70. And so that's what I did. I went to college, moved to Philadelphia after college for work, and just was doing the 9-to-5 thing. And then in kind of mid-2018, I stumbled upon real estate a little bit. My wife and I bought a condo in Philadelphia where we were living. And then I was just like, you know, I found this book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, read it or listened to it actually on my walk to work. And it was a light bulb moment. It was just, what the heck are we doing with our time, with our money? You know, we need to be investing in cash flowing assets. And he kind of like shed the light on the fact that your house is not an asset because you're paying money into it, right? It doesn't become an asset really until you sell it. And then you've got to go find another house to live in, right? So just that whole mindset shift was really important. The scary part was I was married, which was positive, but I wanted to make sure that my wife kind of was on the same wavelength that I was, because I was ready to take some of the money. I was a saver. I'm still a saver. I'm a very budgeted person, but I always wanted to have that oh crap money that if something happened, whether I lost my job or whatever, I had money to kind of fall back on. And we had that. And luckily my wife read the book and had the same reaction that I had, was just like, what are we doing? Like, we need to be thinking differently. We were making okay money. We weren't lighting the world on fire by any means, but we had some cash to invest. And I didn't want to go down the single family route. I thought that was too risky from the standpoint that if you have one tenant and that tenant leaves, then you're paying the mortgage. We weren't financially secure enough to float a whole other mortgage plus our mortgage and plus our lifestyle. So I started going down the duplex route, 2 to 4 units, looked in Philadelphia for a while, couldn't find anything. And then just by happenstance, I Googled best markets to invest. And this was like early 2019. And the normal players came up, the Floridas, the Georgias, the Texases. But then Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania came up. And I was like, I always wanted to invest in my backyard. That's what a lot of people think is like the best place to invest is the places that you know. But I had some affinity to Pittsburgh. My mom grew up there. I spent a lot of time there as a kid. And so I called one real estate agent and I said, here's who I am. I'm a new investor. I want to invest and I want you to help me find the right property and I'll pull the trigger when the timing's right and we find the right property. The guy was like, cool. For about 3 months, we looked at properties, found one that we liked and bought it. I essentially bought it sight unseen. First time I saw it was during the inspection and we still own it today. It's been doing really, really well. So I'm excited about that property. But then we realized like we couldn't scale that. We didn't have enough capital to just keep investing 50, 60 grand into these duplexes. And at that point, we were consuming a lot of real estate content, bigger pockets, listening to other podcasters. And I kept coming back to this multifamily, the syndication model where you don't have to invest your own money or a lot of your own money. You can invest your time. And it was a cool factor where it was like, I own that 150 unit apartment complex down the street, right? Like that's really cool to say. And I started looking into it kind of more deeply, started to figure out how to underwrite these deals and realized that what the heck happens if I find one? I don't have the capital to invest in. I don't have the track record necessary to get a loan on any of these properties. And so I quickly realized I needed to find a tribe of people, a mentor program that would give me the knowledge and the track record and the skill set to go out and actually find these deals, but also have the ability to take them down.
Yeah.
And so I looked into a couple of programs, ended up landing on one, Mark Kenny's Think Multifamily Group based out of Texas, but we've got people all over the country. And I've been in that group for, it's my third year, and it's been amazing. I've been able to invest as a limited partner. I've also been able to build up a decent general partnership stake as well in some of these deals. So that's kind of how I got into it. I'm happy to unpack some of that stuff. Along the way, I left corporate America and started another business. So there's a lot going on.
Busy guy. One thing I want to unpack first, that I think this might have been one of the most important things you said, is anyone out there that is trying to achieve any type of goal or make a change in their life and they are in a relationship, they have a partner, the most important thing is to have both of you committed to that goal, right? You're going to have a lot of battles. You're going to be swimming against stream in a lot of scenarios, and you don't want to be swimming against the current at home, right?
Right.
That's just not going to be conducive to you achieving your goals. So I'm glad you brought that up, that she read the book, she committed, she understood, and that's half the battle. I've talked to a lot of successful business owners throughout my career, successful people in business. Side note, it kind of makes me want to start a business-specific podcast,
right.
But back to the point. Time and time again, they've mentioned that their success goes to a supportive partner. So I'm glad you brought that up. And that's so cool that you guys are doing it together.
Yeah. And just kind of talk a little bit about that, because there's a lot of trials and tribulations that we went through and mindset stuff that kind of set us up to have the financial foundation to take some risks. So just to touch on that a little bit. So yeah, she was fully bought in. And so we bought the duplex in May of 2019. I had also changed jobs at the end of 2018. And my whole career has been in recruiting, started it right out of college. And I was now at that point, head of recruiting for a mid-sized wealth management company in Philadelphia. And I always had this entrepreneurial bug. I always like, I kind of want to do my own thing. I kept coming back to like, I can make a lot of money in recruiting if I start my own business. I had a really good network in Philadelphia. I'd lived there at that point for like 10 years. So I felt pretty comfortable that I could jump out on my own and at least cover my salary, but also that gives me the time to then devote more time and effort to real estate investing and finding deals and raising money and all of that. And so one thing we did in 2019 was we downgraded our lifestyle. We owned that condo in Philadelphia. We ended up moving to a small apartment out in the suburbs. It wasn't the nicest place in the world, but our goal was to essentially compact our expenses so that we could live off of my wife's salary, because I was going to then, my goal was to then leave my W-2 job, which I was making six figures, making good money. It was pretty great. But I had this like bigger vision in mind, and my wife and I were in lockstep with that. So we talked to a lot of our friends, that were at that point buying houses, maybe buying their second house because they outgrew their first one. And we were doing the exact opposite. We only had one car. We were like, okay, we're going to just compact our lives. And then the goal was then in 2020 was to quit my job. And that's what happened. So we moved to the suburbs, January kind of second or third of I got back to the office after the holidays, told my boss, I was like, hey, I'm quitting. I'm going to start my own business to not only to do real estate, but also recruiting. And then COVID hit. And we were put through our paces in 2020 because if we all remember 2020, nobody was hiring. We were all kind of going through our each kind of individual COVID story. And I made half the money I made from recruiting. I made half the money that I did the previous year. So
yeah,
can put a very large strain on a relationship. And luckily, my wife kept her job throughout. We actually ended up moving to Austin, Texas in October of 2020. So we had a lot of change. And we were so focused on the financial goals that we had set out that my time was then, instead of doing a lot of recruiting, because there wasn't enough to kind of spend 40 hours a week or 50 hours a week doing it, I pivoted and just started digging in and learning how to underwrite these multifamily deals. I underwrote probably 200 of them that year, submitted a bunch of offers, never got anything, but just was kind of learning the business. And I may not have had that opportunity if COVID wouldn't have hit and recruiting would have been super busy like it has been the last 2 years. So I just wanted to kind of tell that story that intentionally downgraded our lives a little bit. We weren't really flashy people anyway. We didn't go out to dinner all the time. And anyway, but we purposely did that so we could then take our time, invest it in things that were going to pay off in the long run. And that's what has happened. I still have a recruiting business that's been going really well. 2023 may be a little bit different story than 2021 and 22, but yeah. So I just want to share that because that's, to your point, having a very supportive and onboard partner is very important because that could have definitely put a massive strain on the relationship.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you mentioned that because I recently, on our Finance Friday episodes, I recently talked about, obviously, the best way to build capital right now to then take down opportunities that are going to present themselves. The best way to do that is obviously increase your income, but we all know that doesn't happen overnight. So what you can do in the meantime is reduce some of your larger fixed expenses. So I'm glad you brought that up because like I say it all the time, you got to live the life most won't today, so then you can live the life that most can't in the future. And that's comes down to sacrifices. So I'm glad you brought that up. Sometimes you got to downgrade where you live. You got to downgrade the car you drive. It all adds up if you can keep making sacrifices. And then one day you're never going to have to worry about that stuff.
Totally. Yeah.
All right, I just want to segue. I didn't think we were going to go here, but I just realized this could be a good topic for the listeners because you have your own recruiting business. Kind of two questions here. One, are there any pros to having this company that can relate to your real estate business? And then two, I could see benefits, one from hiring when you're growing your real estate business. And do you have any tips for what people should look out for when they're recruiting?
Yeah. So the first part, it definitely helps because I'm a natural introvert. I'm not a super outgoing person, but the real estate world, especially in the commercial, large commercial, it's a group of people that are taking down these deals. It's not you or I that are individually buying a 150 unit apartment complex. You know, you have to work with the lender, you've got a tax professional, you've got other people that are raising money, KPs that are signing on the loan. So you've got 10, 12, 15 parties, property managers, asset managers, all these people that you have to work with and you've got to find them, right? So you've got to recruit these people. One of the ways that I was able to do that easily was joining the ecosystem of the Think Multifamily platform. And there's a lot of people that we kind of partner together and they have lenders that they've worked with in the past and tax people and lawyers. And so if you're trying to build the team being in recruiting, it's like, okay, here's what I'm good at. And here are the other things that I need to fill the gaps. And who are those people that I can talk to within this group, outside of the group that can help? So it's absolutely helped me to kind of identify my skill sets and what I think I'm good at and where I can contribute to a deal. And then what are the areas of deficiency where I need to fill those gaps with other people, other vendors, et cetera. So it definitely has helped to kind of build that team. And then if you were, one of the cool things is I'm actually able to work with, I've done a few recruiting jobs for real estate teams and help them build their own team, which has been pretty cool because I didn't think that was going to be a niche that I was going to go after. So it's been pretty cool to kind of help the people that I've known. They're like, hey, I really need help finding this person, or I need help with this type of task and I can help them find a contractor or whatever the case is. So that's been cool. But if you are in the role or the world where you're like, okay, it's me, maybe it's me and your partner, and you're like, okay, we need this other skill set, I would just take a really hard look at the amount of hours that you think that person's going to need to work And it may not make sense to hire a W-2 full-time employee. It may make sense to outsource it to a company that's an expert in that, or hire a contractor for certain projects that you may not need to provide benefits and a salary. You can just say, hey, for the next 6 weeks, we need you to help us build this, right? Or these assets or these things. And I'm always happy to talk to people if they're in that kind of, I want to grow, but I don't want to take on the risk and the burden of a full-time employee. So there's pros and cons to all of that stuff. So it's been interesting for sure. And there's no one right answer. Some people are very risk focused and they just go full force. Others kind of maybe are like me, risk averse and kind of take baby steps. So, but yeah, it's been pretty cool.
Now, that's cool how they've kind of become like symbiotic. And
yeah,
I could see how that would be, that could happen. So cool. Good to know. Let's talk about some of your deals.
Yeah.
How are they being found? How are you putting them together? And then is there anything you're seeing now that you're operating them, anything you're seeing in this current environment?
Yeah. So when we started out, we started on the LP side, and the things that you learn from people in the multifamily world is super interesting, right? And I never realized that I could take an old 401k from an old job, move it into a self-directed IRA, had no idea what that was at the time, and then invest that into anything I want for the most part, right? I can invest in real estate. You got to deal with like UBIT taxes and things like that. Or you can put it in the markets. You can do kind of whatever you want. So we actually moved one of my old 401ks and one of my wife's into separate self-directed IRAs. And those were our first two multifamily investments. And so actually one of them just sold last week. So I'm just waiting on kind of what the return profile will be on that. But it's last, we bought that in, they bought it in September of 2020, and it's been doing pretty well for the last couple of years. So that'll be my first kind of full cycle deal that I've actually gone through the process. So I'm kind of curious to kind of see what the return profile is on that and kind of how that all worked. But that one was very passive. I haven't really been involved in that at all. I've been a GP on, I think we're wrapping up our fifth deal this year. Should close by the end of the year. So I'm excited about that one. I think the biggest things that are interesting is if you're an limited partner and you are looking to put your capital into multifamily, you've got to do, if you're not super savvy on the multifamily underwriting, you've got to be super focused on finding a good operator or a good capital raiser that knows how to find good operators, because the last few years, the market has bailed out a lot of crappy deals because they've just, the amount of appreciation, the amount of rent growth that's gone in, it's papered over a lot of cracks that these deals would have fallen apart a long time ago. But, and now they're starting to kind of, some of the roosters are kind of coming home to roost, I think. Because I've seen a lot of deals that are sold that are, we just need to get out and get our money back to our investors. And yep. Luckily, I haven't been in any of those that have gone to the, oh crap, we need to sell these today side. But some of them have delayed distributions or paused distributions because they were on floating debt. They were doing a bridge loan and they didn't have a rate cap because 2 years ago, the economy was super great and everything was going full bore. And now they're like, oh crap, we underwrote that we were going to have a 5.5% interest rate. It's gone to 7 or something like that. So the debt service and the interest payment has gone up 20-30%. So I think the deals that I'm raising money for, one, I look at the operator. I look at, hey, who found the deal? What market is it in? And what's their focus on or strategy around not only property management, because that's very important. Those are the people that are boots on the ground. And people don't realize, but there are people that are running these deals day to day, finding tenants, fixing repairs that are making 30, 40, 50 grand, right? And so you've got these multi-million dollar assets that you've got these very, very good and competent people, but they're not making a ton of money. So you've got to find the right property management company and make sure that they have the right strategy for that asset. Because a lot of the deals that we do are value add. So we buy 70s to 90s product that needs some tender love and care, and we need property managers that know how to be really scrappy around doing these repairs quickly with good materials, making a safe and secure place for somebody to live. So finding a good property manager is really important. So I always ask the guy who or gal who found the deal, what their strategy is, what that property manager's track record is in that specific market and within that specific asset class. Because if you find a property manager that's really great at A class and lease up, way different than a 1970s product that we're doing 75% of the units and we're renovating all of them, right? And then one of the things that's really important that I'm really focused on this year, not myself personally, but find people that are really good at it, is asset management. And for people that don't know, really, once you buy the deal, that's great. Everybody celebrates, but then you've got to operate the thing. And that goes down to the property manager being able to execute on your business plan, but also an asset manager or asset managers who are there to really make sure that the property manager is executing and following through on the KPIs, and then being able to take that information and push it back out to the limited partners, because they need to know what's going on. They need to go know the good, the bad, and the ugly. And so having an asset manager that is competent and able to effectively and consistently communicate to the investors, and not just sending out a rent roll, because I don't know if your investors, but my investors don't look at a rent roll. And if they do, they don't really know exactly what it is. There's way too much information on it. So making sure that the information is concise and readable and understandable pretty quickly. So yeah, some of the deals that I'm working on, we've had to change asset managers just because there's a lot more emphasis on asset management right now. And so we've had to kind of pivot around that. We've had to change property manager because we realized maybe after 6 months to a year, they aren't the best suited for that style of asset in our business plan. So we've had to pivot a little bit on that stuff. So I think 2023 is going to be the year of the operator. And those are the deals that are going to be successful versus the ones that were overbought, overpriced, and they're hoping to see the same 20 to 30% rent growth. I don't think that's going to happen. I live in Austin, Texas, and I've seen rents continue to go up, but definitely not at the clip that they have been the last 2 years for sure.
Man, I felt like you read one of my tweets. Let me see if I could find it here. I said the unprecedented appreciation we saw in multifamily real estate market over the last 2 to 3 years drove the almost guaranteed success of investors. What will drive success in the next 24 months will come down to one major thing: operations. Obviously, I can't agree with you more, man. And to your point, it comes down to people, people and systems, or people and process, if you want to do two P's, right? That's what it comes down to. And to your point on certain property management companies being better at certain asset classes, and both within multifamily and outside of multifamily, you're 100% correct. Also from a regional perspective too.
Yeah,
I think some people just are intimate with certain markets. So sometimes it's smarter to go with a regional player versus a national player. Or if it is a national player, do they have they had boots on the ground for a good amount of time?
Yeah.
And then same with your construction management team. Do they know that? Are they intimate with that market? Do they have longstanding relationships with subs? That's what it really comes down to. Because to your point, it's all about driving operations in the coming months, because things are going to get tighter and you're going to have to run things efficiently. And also, like your point of, I've preached this and I know others that have preached it. We're talking about multi-million dollar assets that are run by people making 40 to 60K. And that's just the way it is. But we need to find the right people.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And
on the tours that I've gone on, you can tell pretty quickly, and maybe it's my recruiting kind of ears perking up when I talk to these property managers, but you can tell which ones love their job, love the tenants, and are happy to. I toured a deal here in Austin a week or so ago, and I talked to the property manager. She's been on site for, I think, 3 years. And, you know, she lives South Austin. There's just a lot of traffic in Austin, but to make the story simple. And so, you know, during COVID, she loved it. She would come up and she was the only property person. It's 108 units and there's a property manager and maintenance person. Those are the only two employees on site day to day. And so it can be lonely because you're sitting in an office and you don't have a lot of tenants coming in. They were fully leased, so they didn't have a lot of like transitions and stuff. And so anyway, she was just like, during COVID, it was great. I got up here in 20 minutes, no traffic. And now it takes her 45 minutes, one to get there in the morning and an hour and a half to get home. And she's like, but I do it because I love the tenants. I built some relationships with these tenants and the owners and all of that. So finding people that just exude the grit that you need to be a property manager, especially at some of these BC class assets that are in transitioning neighborhoods. And you can tell pretty quickly who are the good ones and who are the ones that may not push the envelope enough to get the returns that you need for your investors.
No, it's so true. And that comes down to, one, you're trying to serve the residents, and two, you're trying to serve your investors by getting certain returns. And yeah, it's so true. When you walk a property, you can really tell who wants, what property managers want to be there. Do they actually know the tenants or the residents, excuse me? Do they know the residents by name? And if they do, that means that they actually care, one, about the residents, but the property too, and the property success. And it shows that they're actually going out and doing their job, walking the property, getting to know the residents, making sure collections are there. And that's another thing that's so important about tours. And that's why we always tour before we even, I wouldn't say always, but we try to, close to 100% of the time, we'll tour before we even submit our first round of LOI, just because, it could look good on a spreadsheet, but you need to be get there, one, feel for that area, feel for the property, but also get a feel for the staff, because ideally you don't want to have to go in and hire new staff because that just slows things down.
Yeah. To your point about spreadsheets, like you can make every deal look great on a spreadsheet, right? Like, and that's one thing I've been very critical. And luckily I had the time in 2020 to understand how to underwrite deals. And I'm not a financial wizard. I'm not an Excel guru by any means, but if you take the time to sit down, you can pretty quickly pick up in the analyzers, and everybody has their own unique analyzer. The good thing about the Think Group is we all use the same tools, talk the same language. So when I have people sending me deals that they want me to raise on, I can go into the analyzer and quickly see, I may not know the market, I may not know kind of the property itself, but I can tell where they're aggressive and where they're conservative. Because you'll never hear a syndicator be like, I've been really aggressive on this deal, but give me your money, right? They're always like,
everyone's conservative. It's just what level, you know, exactly.
And yeah, it's everybody's, what's your conservative risk profile? And so I've seen deals both in the group and out of the group that I think are a little bit more risky and sign on and say, hey, I'm going to help you raise money for that deal, because I tend to invest alongside my investors and I don't want to lose my money. And I absolutely don't want to lose theirs, because I've got friends and family that are in these deals. And even if I don't know you or don't have a great relationship, I still don't want to lose your money, right? Like, that's not the goal.
Yeah.
Because if you do, that's a very quick way to damage reputation and all of that. So
yeah. And I always like to tell investors, like, because we like to put skin in the game too. But to me, my reputation is worth more than the money.
Yeah. If you put in 50 grand, you can recoup that 50 grand.
I can go make money, whether I have to change an industry or not. I can go make money, but my reputation, yeah, if it gets tarnished, could kill my chance to do anything. Right. So we do put skin in the game, but I always tell my investors, this is an added layer of skin in the game. Yeah, actually more important to me. And to your point on the conservative thing, it's so funny. I think it's such an overused term to me. We're making our best educated assumptions.
Yeah.
And some people dig a little deeper to make a more educated assumption. And then it goes to your point of risk tolerance. Some people, their educated assumption has a level of risk or not, right? So, right. And I think that's important too. As an LP, a limited partner, to your point, yes, you need to find ones that are either good operators or no good operators, but you also need to align your risk tolerance with that person, because if you're aligned, you know they're going to be looking for the type of deal that has a level of risk.
Right. Yeah. And that's, like I said before, I haven't raised on any deals outside of the Think Group yet. I will eventually, but I like the fact that we all, and there are people in the group that I think are a little bit more risky than I am. And there are people that are maybe a little more conservative than I am. And so I know going into it that, hey, I go back to the analyzer, I can see pretty easily where they're pulling levers and where they're not, right? And so that's why I've looked at other analyzers outside of our group. And while they may be great, I just don't know them as intimately as I know the Think one. So it takes me a little bit longer to say, okay, what are your assumptions? What's your exit cap rate, right? Like, what are some of the, what's your break-even occupancy? Because if it's at like 80 plus, that's super aggressive right now. I don't think that's going to be achievable or hit it all the time. So I think 23 is going to be really interesting. I think there's still deals to be had.
What do you see happening? Obviously, you don't have a crystal ball, but what do you see happening in 2023?
Yeah, I think, like I said, it's going to be the year of the operator. A lot of the folks that I know, both inside and outside the group, are acquisition focused, that are super focused on finding the deals. They're even saying they're pumping the brakes. One, deal flow is lower now, which is typical this time of the year anyway. But even some of the brokers I'm talking to, they're thinking that Q1, which is typically very heavy deal activity, isn't going to be as active as it usually is, especially over the last couple of years. But who knows what will happen? We all thought 2020 and COVID was going to be super slow, and that was the exact opposite, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be, a lot of people are going to be focused on operations. I think they're going to need to be, because I think, like we said earlier, if they bought a deal over the last 2 years, they may not have assumed an interest rate that they're getting. If they did variable debt, the expenses are probably going up faster than what they anticipated, both for payroll and for construction materials, things like that, just due to inflation. And the labor shortage is a real thing. I know a lot of people are getting laid off in the tech world, but trying to find skilled labor and even unskilled labor that can go in and do these things is very, very difficult. And it's very expensive to find the right folks. So I think it's going to be a lot of operations. I think there'll still be deals to have. I've already seen deals that have come out that are priced at a certain number that have sold for under that. So I think brokers are also going to have to start doing more work. I'm not saying brokers are bad, but
I've seen it in my getting calls. I've seen it in my email inbox. I had one that said, he actually told me the work he did. He said, I went through our internal, one of the big brokerage firms went through our internal matrix and saw that you bought X asset class in X type of market, I have something similar where you take a look. So yeah, I've already seen them putting in more work.
Yeah.
Whereas in the last 2 years, they haven't had to do anything. They've just sent an email and then we all call.
Right. If they get a deal, they're going to get 30 offers regardless of what price they put out there.
Right.
I guess the bad thing is being a syndicator is low barrier to entry. Frankly, you don't have to be certified. Like, I'm not a licensed syndicator or anything like that. Like, I just did some research and learned and I was like, oh, cool. This looks like a good thing. And so that's why I go back to, you got to be really careful about who the operator is. But I think 23, I'm still looking for deals. I'm still going to raise money. I'm going to be very focused on building out my investor kind of network. I'm of the mindset from a capital raising standpoint, I like to have a good group of people that know, like, and trust me and that are willing to invest versus having a list of 10,000 people that I just blast an email out and hope I get 1 or 2% of people to click I'm interested. People are successful doing that. I just don't. Back to your reputation piece, I want this to be a long-term thing for me. I don't want this to be a flash in the pan, do a couple of years and then ride off in the sunset. This is a lifestyle for me from being an entrepreneur and kind of being able to live the life that I want. So yeah, to answer your question directly, I think a lot of operational focus in 23. I think there will be deals to be had. I think deal flow will be lower. I'm very focused on deals in primary markets versus a tertiary, secondary market, because the investors that I have in my network, I've talked to them about other markets. And while they would have been open to taking a quote unquote risk in a secondary market 6, 8, 12 months ago, they're not likely to do that now. So finding deals that are in stable markets that are still growing is going to be really important. And it's just a matter of finding a deal that you can be as conservative as you possibly can and still get them. I will probably not win a lot because I hate saying the word conservative, but I'm more risk averse than I think some other people are.
Hey, you can sleep at night.
That's right. I'd rather lose a deal that somebody else won, knowing that it'll probably come around in about 18 months when they're like, oh crap, we can't refinance because we haven't been able to hit our business plan yet. Yell and just get out of it. So
that reminds me, my fiance and I were looking at our goals the other night that we made at the beginning of the year. And one of mine was obviously level of acquisitions that we were going to do this year. And we didn't hit it. We weren't even close, to be frank. And I told her, I was like, look, like obviously looking at that number, not hitting it from an ego perspective and how driven I am, that is disappointing. But at the end of the day, the reason we didn't hit it is because we took calculated risks and we weren't willing to take risks that some people were making. At the end of the day, I'm going to be able to sleep at night. And some of those people are going to have probably some pretty bad 12 to 24 months. So at the end of the day, I'm okay with not hitting those goals, because it's not that we weren't out there beating the ground, putting in the work we need to put in. We made tons of offers. We were best and final on a lot of them.
Yeah.
We just weren't going to make some stupid mistake just so I could go on Instagram and LinkedIn and say, hey, I added another 200 units. That's not what it's about. It's about being I have a fiduciary duty to my investors.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. So I'm glad you brought that up. And I agree with you. I think the real estate slowdown we're seeing right now is debt driven. The economy was overstimulated the past 2 years. We had such cheap debt for 2 years, probably way lower than it should have been, that just pumped valuations way up. And what it's going to come down to for in terms of deals is it's mostly going to be people selling because they have to. And it's going to be debt driven because, to your point, they had adjustable rate debt, floating rate debt, don't have any rate caps.
Right.
And they're going to have to sell. And then the guys that have fixed rate debt, they're probably not going to sell because they can just ride it out and wait till valuations come back. So I think that's what we're going to see. So I think it's also going to be a slowdown in deals, but there's still going to be deals to be had.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just a matter of sifting through the ones that are, they may look great on paper, but they're not.
Yep, agreed. All right, Justin, you're the first person to do what I'm going to call, I just thought of this during our episode too.
Got it.
Financial four, the last four questions of the episode. You're the first one to run them through. So let's do it. First one, why multifamily real estate as an asset class? And if it has, how has it changed your life?
The reason why I like real estate in general is I can touch it, feel it, see it, go visit it, right? As opposed to a stock that is on a spreadsheet somewhere. Why multifamily? Kind of going back to the point I said earlier, the single family, I know a lot of people that are successful in single family, but you know, one tenant leaves, you're on the hook for the full mortgage. Multifamily, you have the economies of scale. You also get the tax advantages, forced appreciation. That's the other thing I like in commercial real estate and commercial real estate in general and multifamily is if you buy a residential house, your house is priced based on the comps that sold in the area, right? Whereas, yes, you look at comps in commercial real estate and multifamily specifically, But if I can force appreciation and have a better NOI than the property next to me, mine's going to sell for a higher value than the one next to me. So I like the ability to go in and actually make improvements to a property. And that improvement could be reducing expenses, right? Keeping your income flat, but reducing some expenses, that increases your NOI and that increases the value of property. So, and the other thing is everybody needs a place to live. I know a lot of people, especially in the remote workforce that we have right now and the hybrid structure, there's a lot of companies that are not renewing their leases or not renewing all of their lease space from an office standpoint. That's why I don't like office and investing in office space, just because people are like this, they're Zooming and they're doing meetings and things like that. So that's why I like multifamily real estate. I like the asset class itself because I can see it. I like the scalability of it. I like to be able to force appreciation through effective operations. It's really cool to say I own LP in over 2,000 units. I'm a GP in over 600, right? So it's like, it's cool to say I own a piece of that pie. So yeah, those are some of the reasons.
Awesome, man. All right, second question. If you had a time machine and you could go back in time to a younger Justin, what is one piece of financial advice that you would give him to set him up for maybe a better future?
Yeah, I've got two. One is more practical. I would get involved in real estate earlier on. I thought about kind of the house hacking thing before a house hack was actually a term.
Yeah.
When I was getting out of college, I was like, oh, I should buy a house. But then I was like, oh, I can't afford the full mortgage because I was in a sales job. I was working for a staffing firm and my base salary was fairly low. My upside was infinite, which is what they sell you on. And so I was like, what if I had a roommate or two, they could help pay for the rent or pay the mortgage. So I wish I would have done that kind of a mindset earlier and started to acquire more. And that would have been single family. So I would have kind of go against my philosophy. But I think I would have tried to do that more and also diversify some of the investing that I was doing. Because again, my thought process was just grow money in a savings account, earning that point, they were actually earning interest back when I was younger. And I would have gotten more involved in some passive real estate investing earlier on in my career. The second one is more kind of a opportunistic thing. Really quick story. One of my best friends from college, I was in his bachelor party in, I can't remember, 2010, 2011. And his brother was a web developer working for a startup called Bitcoin. And he was getting paid in Bitcoin. And this was before Bitcoin was, it was less than a penny. And so I wish I would have invested in Bitcoin back then and then sold it when it hit 60,000. So that was oh crap moment. But yeah, I would definitely get involved in real estate more and just think about what I'm spending my time investing in earlier on, because I was just a saver and I still am. I love having a nest egg, but I would definitely be a little bit more investing it, even into something like bonds that are safer. They're more risk averse than stocks, just to get a little bit more interest.
I think it's important to have that balance for sure. Number three,
yep.
What is one mistake you've made that maybe set you back? What did you learn from it and how has it made you better?
I think one of the mistakes I made was, and this could be looked at as a mistake or not, but I was going to jump out of the corporate world probably 3 or 4 years earlier because I had started my own business on the side. I was doing some side recruiting, even when I was a W-2 at a corporate office, and I just didn't take the plunge. And I think I wasn't mentally ready or physically prepared to do it. But I think if I would have done it back then, I probably would have a bigger recruiting business than I do now. I would like to think that anyway, but I think I would have just taken the plunge a little bit earlier and said, and bet on myself and been a little bit more, I guess, risky at that moment. But yeah. And also I think just general, when people are feeling safe and secure, this is just a general comment that I've seen in my 16 years of recruiting. People think a W-2 job is safer and more secure than being in business for yourself. It's not. I've been part of startups. I've been part of Fortune 500 companies, and you are a line item on a spreadsheet. And especially if you're publicly traded, they need to hit their numbers above anything else. And I've seen really awesome employees get laid off or reorganized at no fault of their own. And even if you're making a lot of money, if you've got a family and everything, it's hard to do that, to lose that job. So whether you're doing a side hustle or something like that, it's always, I like to use the term financial foundation. So you have that footing, that secure footing to say, whether you get injured, you lose your job, whatever, you have that footing to say, I can take some time and find the right job, or, hey, I'm going to bet on myself now. So that's his general comment. So
love it, man. All right. Number four, what is one business book or resource that you would recommend to others?
I'm going to cheat and say two, but the one that I always go back to is Rich Dad Poor Dad. That's the book that literally was the catalyst to the light bulb moment. Literally, I was walking to work and I'm like, what am I doing? So if you haven't read it, I'm sure you've got a lot of people that are real estate focused in this podcast that are have already probably read it. I think that's still a great book to kind of teach you what I didn't know when I was a kid, kind of growing up. So I think that's definitely a great book. And also, if you're thinking about, you talked about goals and things like that, a book called Vivid Vision. It's a really short, quick read, but it really helps you to think through and actually write down in detail what you want your life to look like in 3 years. And then being able to like look at it every day, every week and say, how am I getting to that goal? And I wrote one 3 years ago. My life looks completely different than what I thought I'd be living in Tampa, Florida. I'm living in Austin, Texas. But a lot of the other things that I talked about are pretty close to being on track. So even if you don't hit your goals, like you talked about earlier, like at least you have the goals and you can't hit something that you don't actually write down and think about. Yeah. So that's a great book. It's really a quick read, but it's really a powerful book to kind of think about what you're going to do. This is a great time of the year to do it. We're recording this mid-November. So think about 2023, 4 or 5, and how do you want your life to be different, better, all that fun stuff. So that's a great book.
Yeah, I read that at the beginning of this year. I plan on doing it again at the end of the year because, like you said, it's a quick read, but it just gets you in that right mindset.
Yeah, my wife and I have done it. We've written our own separate Vivid Visions, and then we've kind of talked about them together. We're actually going to be going and doing kind of a planning retreat for us in Fredericksburg in a couple of weeks to get out of our house and to just have that be a little bit of a respite, but also what are our goals for 23 and beyond. So it's really important if you are kind of in that entrepreneurial spirit. And my wife's still a W-2 worker. She had a great job and that helps us to afford a lot of things that we do so we can take all the money that I make in recruiting and invest it in real estate. But yeah, it's really important to align your futures kind of together for sure.
Love it, man. All right, before I let you go, Justin, where can the listeners find you?
Yeah, we could put a lot of this in the show notes, but LinkedIn is my main area. I'm on it daily, if not every hour of the day for the most part, because of my recruiting business. I've got a lot of following on there. So LinkedIn's probably the best. My real estate website is greatventurecapital.com. And my email is just justin@greatventurecapital.com. But this has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you taking the time. This has been a great conversation.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll be in touch. And listeners, as I always say, easy doesn't pay well and instant gratification is self-destructive. So not only get out there and work hard for your money, but have your money work hard for you so we can all create the lives of our dreams and make this world a better place. All right, I'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is an investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.